people.
If you are not the man you profess to be, then who are you?
Before Rezkin could respond, Farson appeared at his side.
You are free with your words. Last night and today, you reveal much. What has loosened your tongue?
Rezkin ran a thumb along the warm metal of a knife he kept up his sleeve. He had done the same many times as a small man to remind himself that words could be as dangerous as a blade. He watched the kite swoop in ever-tightening circles. He wondered if the Citadel's power was still affecting him and shifted his focus to feel for the warmth of the small stone resting against his chest. Guy interrupted his thoughts when he blurted,
"Is that your cat?"
Rezkin looked down to see the small tortoise sitting in the middle of the road staring at him. It flicked its tail and then ran into the grass on the west side of the road. Rezkin's gaze flicked to the sky, and he followed the kite as it swept around again.
"Raise the alarm. Prepare for battle. Kai, check the rear. Fasten the sides."
Rezkin yanked the packs from Pride's back and then threw himself into the saddle. Heavy footfalls tore up dirt and rocks as the horse pounded down the road toward the front of the procession. Men scattered amongst angry shouts, but not fast enough. In his urgency, Rezkin was forced to direct Pride into the grass where the chance of a misstep was greater. He had to stop the convoy before they waded into the trap. He was too late. Rezkin's furious arrival at the front inspired the Drogliks to attack early. Their company had not yet been surrounded, but the horde emerging from the grass was so great it would make no difference. The White Crescents would be overrun. A horn blared just as the first of the Drogliks jumped for Rezkin. Although they were the size of an adolescent child, the creatures were capable of jumping half again their own height. The Droglik crashed into Rezkin's side, its scaly arms wrapping around him as it gnashed at his throat with its sharp teeth. Rezkin held tight to the saddle as he thrust a dagger into the soft tissue beneath his attacker's arm. Another Droglik jumped at the stallion's head, and Pride reared, crushing the creature beneath his massive hooves. Rezkin held tight as the Droglik that had attacked him lost its grip, giving him enough time to draw his sword. The injured Droglik leapt at him again, its perseverance rewarded with a blade through the throat. Pride gnashed his teeth at another of the creatures and broke through the purple scales on its shoulder. The Droglik shrieked and swung a sharpened stone hatchet at the horse's neck. Kingslayer took the creature's arm off as Rezkin drew blade sunder. He gripped the saddle with his legs as the blades flashed through the air at his sides, scoring scaled flesh and rending armor. One Droglik latched onto Pride's hindquarters, and Rezkin was glad they had been traveling as mercenaries. The creature's talons tore through the shabby caparison that hid the quality male cruppers beneath. Rezkin twisted in his saddle and slashed at the Droglik's worn armor. As he drew back his blade again, Pride unexpectedly bucked, tossing the Droglik into Rezkin's back. The creature wrapped its arms, taut with wiry muscle, around Rezkin's chest, its claws digging into his brigandine. Rezkin's muscles clenched as the horse trampled another Droglik, but the thrashing and the weight of the Droglik on his back eventually forced Rezkin from the saddle. Pride kicked out at exactly the wrong time, smacking blade sunder from his grip in midair. Rezkin landed atop the Droglik, the air knocked from his lungs. He inhaled sharply and then swept Kingslayer across his own chest, amputating one of the creature's hands. The creature screamed in his ear as Rezkin drew his serrated belt knife. He threw his feet over his head and rolled backward to crouch above the Droglik's head. He plunged the dagger into the lizard man's throat, and blood and ragged flesh spewed across his face as he withdrew the wicked weapon. Rezkin looked up to see a gangly Droglik in patchwork leather armor grinning at him as it collected blade sunder from the bloody dirt at his feet. The Droglik's yellowed, pointed teeth dripped with saliva and it hissed. With the hilt gripped in both hands, it raised the sword over its head and then shrieked in pained horror. Its hands came down, but it seemed unable to release its grip. The air filled with the scent of charred meat as the flesh beneath the creature's scales began to glow red and smoke erupted from its hands, which crumbled like blackened soot. Blade sunder toppled to the ground as the Droglik's scream was silenced by the blue-swirled steel of the sword's kin. Rezkin could hear the discordant crescendo of battle, but he had no time to check on his friends. They were at the rear of the convoy, while he was in the thick of the enemy. Pride stomped and thrashed as Drauglix jumped at him, slashing with stolen blades and stabbing with primitive spears. Some of the creatures threw stones, and Rezkin was grateful they had no arrows and crossbows. The battle was fierce, and it did not sound like the other horses were faring as well as Pride.
Wesson stood in the center of the circle with Minder Finwë, his sword-wielding companions fending off the enemies advancing on them. From where he was standing, he felt as though the enemies were targeting him, but he knew that was absurd. Everyone was fighting except him and the Minder at least gripped a dagger. Wesson had never acquired any skills with mundane weapons, believing the curse of his destructive power was terror enough. He knew that using power could expose him and potentially attract the attention of the purifiers. A part of him, the part that dwelled deep within, the part he kept locked behind a fortress of mental barriers, was fighting for release. He wanted out. It wanted to spew flame and render flesh from bones. It wanted to burst the bodies of his enemies in a bloody rain, a glorious red swath painted across everything in sight. And he wanted to let it.
No,
he reminded himself.
Beauty before bane,
his personal mantra.
Quell the storm.
A Drauglix lunged at Isaria with a stone club, while another raked her across the back with vicious claws that scored so deeply into her armor that a trickle of blood seeped from the wound. She ducked as the club sailed toward her head, and the creature smacked his own comrade in the jaw. The injured Drauglix screamed, his jaw hanging limp, and then leapt at the one that had struck him. While the first Drauglix was distracted, Isaria threw her weight into a mighty upswing that cleaved the stone-wielding Drauglix from the groin upward through his buttock to finally lop off the tail. The creature fell, writhing to the ground, and the other landed atop him shortly after with a gushing jugular. Wesson suddenly stumbled as he was shoved from behind. He turned to see Malsyas fighting off a Drauglix bearing a rusted, broken sword. The creature, which wore an ill-fitted metal helm and chainmail over its torso, was a few inches shorter than Wesson. Although it was strong, it seemed to be having difficulty under the weight of its stolen armor. Its movements were sluggish, but between the metal armor and its natural scales, it was difficult for Malsyas to score a fatal blow. Wesson itched to heat the armor until it glowed yellow and burned through the creature. A moment later, Malsyas finally prevailed with a jab straight through the Drauglix's mouth into its brain. Wesson's mind cleared long enough for him to be sickened by the bloodthirsty thoughts. Malsyas immediately turned to engage two more of the creatures who were less armored, but equally less encumbered. Beside Malsyas, Brant blocked a swipe of claws with a buckler he must have claimed from one of the Drauglix's. He slammed the buckler into the creature's protruding snout and then sliced his sword across the abdomen exposed below the fragmented wooden armor. The creature doubled over as its entrails spilled over its taloned feet, and Brant kicked it in the head. As it toppled, Brant spun to attack one of the creatures assaulting Malsyas. He sliced the artery of the inner thigh, grabbed the fiend by the tail, and plunged his blade up through the soft tissue into the creature's torso. Wesson forced his eyes away from the liquid red curtain to survey the field beyond his protective circle. The mercenaries were enduring the brunt of it. Only one of the horses besides Pride still stood, and the beast that had been pulling the wagon was long since gutted. He could not see Rezkin, but he could still hear the furious shrieks of the battle charger, which he hoped was a sign that the elite warrior was also still alive. Kai and Farson fought between them and the swarm of Drauglix that had gotten past the mercenaries, and Jimson and Millens were battling the creatures that flanked them through the tall grass. It was obvious that he and his circle were enduring barely a trickle of the overall assault, and he was frustrated. He was the weakest among them without use of the power he so often scorned. Wesson was about to turn when he saw a Drauglix leap at Millens, who was manning the rear. The soldier was already engaged with two of the fiends, and his back was left exposed. The lizard man's talons dug into Millen's lower back, and it wrapped its muscular arms around his head. Without a second thought, Wesson released a stream of raw power, a graceless spell lacking substantial form. The three Drauglix and two more beyond simultaneously exploded. Loose flesh, shards of bone, heads and limbs were ejected several paces in every direction.
Those pieces that had sailed upward came raining down with satisfying thuds, and the prostrate Millens was buried under the shower of bodily debris. Rezkin felt the shock of the spell just as it was released. He had but to wait a breath before it activated. From where he was, he could not see the effect, but he knew that if Wesson had taken the chance on using his power, his friends had to have been in grave danger. He was sure that Wesson would protect them if the situation became dire, but he hoped the mercenaries had not seen the action. The fact that they might have borne witness to an act that in any other kingdom would have been respectable did not seem like a satisfactory reason for killing men who had martial value. It had been some time since he had been in a battle this brutal. These Draugliks had little or no concern for their own lives, and they attacked with ferocity. Although Draugliks had always been fierce foes, they tended to retreat when it appeared they might lose too many. Rezkin had not yet found the Ukwa, the leader or chief of the Drauglik clan, who would sound the call for retreat. While their language was primitive and seemed to have few words, the Ukwa held a position of such importance as to be graced with a Drauglik title. Rezkin finished off the five closest Draugliks with a flurry of Shaelin slashes and thrusts, and then rushed into the tall grass from which the creatures were attacking. Several of the lizard men scattered upon his approach, startled into running rather than fighting. He hacked through a number of others, leaving a bloody trail in his wake until he finally fell upon his prey. The Ukwa was standing on a crudely constructed mound of dirt, stones, and hay so that it could see over the swaying grasses to the battlefield. It appeared to be caked in dried green mud that Rezkin knew to be the dried feces of its followers. The scholars and mages who studied such things posited that doing so allowed the Draugliks to scent their leader. Luckily for Rezkin, it was also easy for anyone else to scent the Ukwa, particularly if the ordure was fresh. The Ukwa saw Rezkin approaching before he could reach the creature. It screamed a senseless cadence, and the half-dozen lizard men who surrounded him echoed his call. The dwindling horde of creatures that were engaged in battle shrieked in unison and then began to retreat. Many flew past Rezkin without even attempting to strike at him, although that did not stop him from hewing down those within his reach. Within minutes, the entire clan had retreated into the grass, and the tousle of stalks continued beyond his view of the horizon. After searching the immediate area for any stragglers, Rezkin strode down the path of detrital gore that he had paved through the pasture. When he arrived at its end, the remaining men and one woman were gathered at the epicenter of the battle where Rezkin had made his stand. Everyone was keeping a safe distance from the battle charger, whose eyes were still rolling as he snorted and stomped on the bodies of dead lizardmen. The mercenaries and his friends were covered in blood, much of it their own. Of everyone, Wesson was the cleanest, and he stood pensively hiding in the rear. Farson and Kai were speaking quietly several paces from the others. Their injuries appeared to be minor, but it was always difficult to tell with strikers. Like Rezkin, they were trained to hide their weaknesses. Malsius, Brant, Isaria, and Minder Finwy all had deep cuts on their limbs and torsos. Millens was laid out on the ground, his shoulders propped against the wagon, and Jimson gripped a dislocated arm, seemingly unconcerned with the seeping gashes across his cheek and jaw. The mercenaries had fared far worse. Of the 27 from the previous day, only 12 remained, and all their horses were lost. Orin stood in the center of the mounded ring of Drauglic bodies. He was slathered in gore, his left hand wrapped in a blood-sodden rag. Rezkin guessed the man had lost a few fingers. The mercenary leader spit a glob of bloody phlegm and said,
"You see that line over there by the wagon?"
Rezkin surveyed the area. A number of Drauglik and mercenary bodies were concentrated in the location. Rezkin nodded.
"My men and yours fought over there, on the other side."
His gaze roved over the surrounding mounds.
"I'd say more than half of the dead lizard demons are on this side. On this side of the line was you. You and that beast you call a horse."
He glanced past Rezkin down the bloody path.
"Who knows what you left out there?"
Rezkin adopted a feral grin. With a sloppy Gendishan drawl, he said,
Whether you run crying or bear the torch, I'm there. I am the darkness.
Orin looked at him like he was mad. Satisfied, Rezkin lightened his tone. I didn't kill them all, if that's what you're asking.
They run off into the grass. Thing about Drauglix is, if you sneak up on them, they'll run. But if they get all hyped up to fight, they don't stop. Not till the Ukwa calls them off.
Blood dripped from Orin's braided black beard, but he did not seem to notice or care.
The Ukwa?
Their chief, Rezkin said as he stepped over bodies to reach Pride. Orin never took his eyes off Rezkin.
Couldn't help but notice over half my men are dead, and all yours are still standing. Well, save that one.
He nodded toward Millens, who appeared pained but awake.
But he don't look to be checking out.
Rezkin said nothing as he examined a few of the Drauglix bodies on the ground.
I guess I'm starting to believe your fish tale, said Orin.
When Rezkin neglected to answer, the man said,
What's your plan now?
Orin's face was pale, and Rezkin realized the mercenary was probably in shock, or he would have been seeing to his wounds instead of asking questions. Rezkin muttered softly to the horse and stroked and petted his neck and sides as he examined Pride's injuries. Once the stallion was calm enough to be led, Rezkin took the reins and started toward the rear of the convoy, where he had left his packs.
Hey!
Orin said as Rezkin made to pass.
I asked what you're planning.
Rezkin shrugged. With a nod, he said, Ask the boss. Orin glanced toward Kai, who was watching the exchange with a sharp gaze, while maintaining quiet conversation with Farson.
You still expect me to believe he's in charge?
Don't matter who's in charge. He's the one you gotta speak to. I'm busy.
Orin turned to his men. Those who could stand were helping the less fortunate move to a clear area where they could tend to their injuries. The mercenary leader held his hands out to the carnage in disbelief.
He's busy, he says.
Rezkin passed. Farson looked at him deadpan and muttered,
Seriously, I am the darkness?
Rezkin grinned.
Outworlders enjoy theatrics.
He was in the midst of cleaning, stitching, and bandaging Pride's wounds when Malcius approached.
What are you doing? Can you not see that people are injured? You care more for the welfare of the horse.
Dipping his fingers into the ointment, Rezkin answered quietly.
We cannot afford for his wounds to fester. It would be much more difficult to tend to a feverish battle charger without the aid of a healer or life mage. Also, right now he is worn from the effort and energy of the battle. Later, he will be rested and churlish. Trust me when I say that we do not desire for him to turn his ill temper on us.
Malcius glanced back to the evidence of Pride's brutality.
No, I should say not. But you will see to the others.
None of you look to be dying.
Malcius scowled.
This will surely scar,
he said, pointing to the gash on his neck. Rezkin said,
I believe warriors enjoy showing off their war wounds.
He did not mention that if the laceration had been a thumb's width to the left, Malcius would have bled out within minutes. Malcius huffed.
Millens is the worst. Those horrid talons ripped into his back and hips. Kai has already seen to Jimson's arm. We can all use some stitches and ointment.
You already know I intend to assist you, Malcius.
Do I? What about the mercenaries? You let that one die last night.
To aid him would have been to risk exposure for what was likely a lost cause.
You might have saved his life,
Malcius replied. Rezkin met the young lord's angry gaze,
and he would have lost it today.
You did not know we would be attacked, or did you?
Shaking his head, Rezkin said,
No, of course not. Do you think that if I had, I would not have planned for it?
What now then? Will you help the mercenaries too, or let them suffer and die?
I will assist. Let them think I picked up some few healing skills in the army. We shall not mention which army.
Malcius nodded, seemingly satisfied, until Rezkin said,
Hold this.
He pulled together split horse flesh. Cautiously, Malcius approached the deadly equine and placed his hands as instructed. A massive black head snaked around, and Malcius yelped as if the horse would bite him. The beast merely rolled his eyes in challenge. After seeing to the worst of Pride's injuries, Rezkin cleaned and stitched Millens. Someone had started a small fire, and the mercenaries were busy cauterizing the worst of their wounds. It was a primitive technique, one used by men with no knowledge or skill in the proper stitching and dressing of wounds. Unfortunately, most who did not die from the wound succumbed to infection. The survivors were left with unsightly and possibly disabling scars. In Gendishin, where even mundane healers were often accused of cavorting with evil spirits or demons, people were willing to risk infection over outright blood loss. Rezkin was in the midst of stitching Millen's wounds when Wesson squatted beside him in the shadow of the wagon.
"Do you think any of them saw?"
the mage asked.
"I do not believe so. If they had, we would surely know of it by now."
Wesson glanced at the mercenaries pensively. One of them, in particular, was staring at them.
"Perhaps, but it could be that they are pretending not to know until they find a purifier. Maybe they are afraid that if I know that they know, we will kill them."
"We will," said Rezkin.
At Wesson's disapproving glance, he said,
"It is not my preference either, but if allowed to live, they will betray us."
"You cannot know that. I cannot believe that everyone in this kingdom is so cruel and hateful. They should be given a chance."
Rezkin gave him a disparaging look.
"A chance to betray us?"
"No, a chance to prove themselves."
Rezkin shook his head.
"I recognize your conviction, but if they fail and behave exactly as we expect them to, we will be the losers."
"He's right," said Millens.
The sergeant was damp with sweat and his eyes were glossy, but he was aware enough to follow the conversation.
"These people, the sentence for harboring or aiding the afflicted is torture and death. They will not risk that for you."
Rezkin did not wish to continue the discussion where they could so easily be overheard, so he ordered the mage to check on the others. Although Wesson had no innate healing ability, and he could not have used it if he had, he did have some education in anatomy and mundane treatments. Wesson stood and bumped into Minder Finwy as he left to do Rezkin's bidding. Rezkin felt the Minder's gaze as he finished the final suture. He applied additional ointment to the wounds and then sparingly applied the bandages. The others still required treatment, and he had no idea if they would be attacked again before he was able to replenish his supply. As Rezkin collected his supplies, he said to the Minder,
"If you are hoping to aid the sergeant in his passing, your services will not be required."
Millens gave the Minder a wary look and shook his head. Finwy smiled and said,
"No, it seems you have done well enough to prevent that."
He glanced up to see that the mercenaries were still gathered afar and said,
"This is not the behavior I would have expected of the dark warrior who defied Ionius in his own throne room."
"You were there?"
Rezkin said.
"I was."
"Then you should already know that my concern was for my people. Sergeant Millens is one of them."
Finwy dropped his gaze to the listless soldier.
"Ionius also believes his concern to be for his people, but I doubt anyone would ever find him administering to their needs personally."
"I have the skills. We are few, and many are injured. Ionius has plenty of people to see to the needs of others in his stead."
"You defend him?"
"No, I concur with your conclusion. It is unlikely, however, that he would ever be put to the test."
"Yet you would not hesitate to kill others who have done no wrong."
"Would you kill someone to prevent a terrible injustice that has not yet occurred, but that you know will happen if you do nothing? Or will you allow it to happen and then punish others for the offense? If you know it is going to occur, are you not also culpable for doing nothing to prevent it?"
"I see your point. It is a most difficult conundrum. I would look to the Maker to guide me."
"And if the Maker is silent?"
"When the Maker is silent, it is because the experience of making the choice is more important than the outcome."
"If the Maker denies his counsel when it is requested, then how can one be held accountable for making the wrong choice?"
Finwy tilted his head.
"Perhaps neither decision is wrong. Perhaps it is about how we deal with the effects of making that choice."
"One of those effects being the judgment of others?"
"You will be judged no matter the choice you make."
"Which is why I do not concern myself with the judgment of others."
Finwy looked at him doubtfully.
"Is that so?"
"I follow the rules, and so I prevail. Eventually, I will not."
The opinions of others concern me only insofar as they either aid or obstruct my plans.
Whose rules are those?
I do not know who made the rules.
He turned to check the status of his friends as he said, perhaps it was the Maker. Followed closely by the Minder, Rezkin meandered between the corpses to where the mercenaries were tending their wounded. They rejected his offer of aid, insisting that they were as capable as any field medic. They were not, but Rezkin had no desire to argue the point. His friends were assuaged that he had tried.
We'll need the horse to pull the wagon,
Oren said for the seventh time.
No,
Rezkin replied for the seventh time.
You're a selfish bastard, thinking that beast you'll pass off as a warhorse is too good to be pulling a wagon. We've got half the wealth of the White Crescents in that wagon.
I've told you, that horse won't pull a wagon, Rezkin said. You try to hitch him up, or you won't have a wagon left to pull.
You whip him good, and he'll learn, Oren groused.
Rezkin scoffed.
He's a finely trained warhorse. Ain't no one gonna break him to pull a damned wagon,
Kai said.
You try to whip that horse, and it'll be the last thing you do.
Oren spied the stallion out of the corner of his eye. He shouted to his men to gather what they could carry and then push the wagon into the grass, covering the tracks as best they could. As he turned away, he muttered,
Bloody horse killed more Droglics than I did. I don't know how you got such a beast, but he's as ornery as you. The both of you, killing things and doing whatever the hells you want. You deserve each other.
A strange sound erupted beside Kai. Rezkin had never heard Farson laugh, but he was laughing now. Rezkin had no idea what was so funny. He and Pride were both trained to be efficient and effective in battle. They were a matched pair, as they should be. Those well enough for the task dug shallow graves for the fallen mercenaries and then put as much distance between themselves and the carnage as they could. With a single camp, the healthiest kept watch in shifts, while the injured fell into fitful, feverish slumber. When Oren became too delirious to reject the healing draft, Rezkin poured it down the mercenary leader's throat. Although Oren's death would have been an opportune time for Rezkin to claim his men, he was disinclined to suffer the trouble. He was satisfied to let Oren keep the other mercenaries in line, and Rezkin was reasonably sure the man knew where he stood. The following day was worse. The wind whipped across the prairie, and every inch of skin not covered suffered its ill effects. Seeds and pollen danced on the breeze like tiny pixies, and every time the travelers were forced to leave the road, the grasses lashed at their arms and legs. The aches from the previous day's abuse had set in, and no one had slept well during the night. They were all too aware that an unknown number of Drowglicks had escaped and could attack again at any time. Eager for the safety of walls and other men, they trudged forward, injured and without horses, forced to carry their own supplies. Just after midday, a plantation came into sight. It was far from the road, but the dirt wagon trail had been well maintained. The main house was a large one-story affair, the kind that wrapped around an inner courtyard. The trim and sills were painted yellow, and white lace blew in the breeze from the open windows. Several outbuildings dotted the property, including quarters for field hands, a barn, smokehouse, and drying shed, along with three squat silos. A trail of large stepping stones led through the shorn lawn to a rustic gazebo that stood in the shade of a few cultivated trees beside a small pond. With autumn near, the cool breeze swept over the short stone wall, still warm from the late summer sun, and insects buzzed and snapped a soothing cadence. It was a tranquil scene, designed and sustained by the loving care of a tender heart, except for all the blood. Bits of bloody hooves and tufts of fur were scattered in the pens. Smeared across the front porch and along the yard was a dry, rusty trail, and scraps of shredded clothing were strewn over the dirt and grass, some still containing body parts. Carrion birds squawked as they fought over the remnants. Pride snorted and stomped over the debris toward a low trough to one side of the barn. The horse vigorously expressed his displeasure as he was forced to wait while Rezkin inspected the water. Meanwhile,
Kai motioned to Brant.
Check the well, he said. Mal, watch the field by the house.
He switched to Lureshi when speaking to Isaria, instructing her to keep an eye on the road. He then followed Farson toward the other outbuildings, while Orin and his men prepared to enter the house. Rezkin drew blades under and stepped into the barn. It was dark inside, and his eyes required a moment to adjust, but his nose had already told him what he wanted to know. Once he could see properly, he checked each stall for confirmation. Rats scattered upon his approach, screeching their displeasure with his arrival. Everything that had been kept in the barn at the time of the attack had been killed. The carcasses of the larger beasts remained, mutilated and divested of their flesh. One did not have to study the plethora of vaguely man-like tracks and deep gouges to know what had happened. A pained shout sounded from the yard, and Rezkin rushed to meet the foe. When he arrived, though, he saw only his party rushing toward Brant, who was tugging something heavy from the well. Tears streamed down Brant's face as he gripped the pale, sodden lump in his arms. It was a small man. A child, Rezkin reminded himself. The boy appeared to be around 9 years old. He could not have been dead for more than a few hours, and he bore no visible injuries.
He was tied to the rope,
Brant said through choked sobs. Rezkin scanned the grasses in the distance as he spoke. This attack appears to have occurred a few days ago. His parents probably lowered him into the well for protection. The water is cold, though, and he likely lost consciousness before drowning. Malcius frowned down at Brant, obviously disturbed by the sight of the boy, but also concerned for his friend.
He is not Alan. Did you hear me, Brant? He is not your brother.
Brant squeezed his eyes shut and took several deep breaths. He lowered the child to the ground and turned away as he regained his feet.
I know. I need a moment.
Do not go far, Rezkin said. We know not what dangers lie in wait.
He motioned to Wesson. Cap the well and mark it. We should not drink the water. We can get what we need from the troughs for now. Malthus's face screwed up in disgust.
You want us to drink from animal troughs?
The one by the barn looks clean enough. Or would you prefer to drink from the well of the dead?
No, the trough will do, Malcius said begrudgingly.
Orin came tromping from the house with a dagger in hand.
What's all the fuss about out here?
Then he noticed the lifeless boy.
Ah, I see. We'll get him buried. Your priest can say a few words.
He cleared his throat and motioned back at the house.
It's a bit of a wreck, but looks like most of the blood's on the outside. It'd be better to take up in the house tonight than risk the fields. If we start early, we'll be in Bergen before sundown.
The mercenary was looking at him, but Rezkin glanced toward Kai. The striker jumped at the silent instruction.
All right, sound like a plan. Let's see what food stores they've got. Don't think we'll be hunting round here.
Orin grumbled.
Like as not, we'll be the ones is hunted.
Hours later, the sun had not yet met the horizon, and the group had already reinforced the doors and windows. They had just finished eating their meal when one of the mercenaries came rushing in to alert them of the new arrivals. A mounted Gendishan military patrol was moving up the road toward the house. Rezkin and Kai shifted to the nearest window, and Malcius and Brant ducked in beneath them for a view. Dozens of soldiers rode Gendishan Reds. At the front, a Dergmeyer, an army rank roughly equivalent to an Ashayan major. Beside him was a Meyer, which was similar to a captain. Behind them were two older men and a young woman in brown robes. Each was adorned with a snakeskin baldric, upon which glinted numerous small medals and talismans. The woman carried a wooden pole with two iron rings, holding multiple sets of chained shackles dangling from the top.
Who are they?
Brant said.
Those in the brown robes are purifiers,
Rezkin replied. As they filed into the courtyard, the mercenaries partially blocked their view of the approaching convoy. Kai hummed under his breath.
It is unusual to see a Dergmeyer on patrol.
Rezkin stepped away from the window and turned to see Wesson staring toward the blocked window. The young mage's expressive face bore a mixture of fear and anger.
You should stay as far away from them as possible. We do not know how effective your amulet will be against whatever method they use to identify the talented.
Then we should test it,
Wesson said. Rezgen glimpsed at the large patrol. This is not the best time. Wesson said,
What? We should wait until we are confined to a city, surrounded by people?
It was completely unlike Wesson to so openly express his disapproval of Rezgen's decisions, but Rezgen knew the mage was sensitive about the issue. Rezgen glanced toward Minder Finwë, who stood silently watching from the doorway that led to the next room, and then looked back to Wesson. If we test it, and it does not work, we will have to kill everyone out there. The purifiers, the soldiers, and the mercenaries. Can you live with that? Wesson turned away and huffed in frustration.
No, I do not want that.
Kai said,
We have trouble.
What is it? Rezgen said as he moved back toward the window.
They are moving in to seize Orin and his men.
Do you see any of ours? Rezgen said, since Farson, Jimson, and Isaria had been keeping watch outside when the patrol arrived.
No. I pulled them back,
Farson said, as he suddenly appeared from behind. Rezgen rested a hand on Brant's shoulder.
Keep an eye out the window.
He turned to Farson.
Why are they detaining the mercs?
I think we had something to do with the destruction here. Orin has been trying to explain, but the Dergmeyer does not believe the Drogliks exist.
Brant called out,
They're coming!
Rezgen wrapped his worn, brown cloak around him and pulled the hood over his head. To Farson, he said,
The others? They are in position.
In position for what?
Malcius asked. As Rezgen moved away, Malcius called,
Wait! In position for what?
Be quiet,
Kai huffed.
They're in position to attack if need be. Come with me. I will position the two of you as well.
We're going to attack a double army patrol?
Malcius exclaimed.
If necessary, Kai said. Would you rather be executed for murders you did not commit?
Rezgen stepped through the doorway onto the front porch, but stopped when he noticed a small, black and brown, splotched cat lying in his path. He made to step around the cat, but it gained its feet quickly, then wound itself in figure eights around and between his feet. He wondered if it was a sign that he should wait. He looked to the patrol that was gathered in the road and side yard. Since he stood in the shadow cast by the setting sunlight, they had not yet seen him. Orin's men knelt in the dirt in a line, and a soldier was preparing to bind their arms.
Get them, the Dergmeyer said.
Orin got to his feet and then turned toward the house. He glanced up to see Rezgen as he stepped into the shade of the porch.
I'm supposed to bring y'all out. They think we attacked the plantation and they won't listen to reason.
Why are they here?
Rezgen said.
They said they were sent to investigate reports of killings and people gone missing. They ain't seen the Drogliks yet. They says if we give up without a fight, they'll take us back to Fort Ulep for a trial.
He glanced back to see his men kneeling in the dirt.
Between us, I don't think they plan to wait. Yours is in good shape, mostly. I wouldn't blame you if you take your men and run.
Rezgen met the mercenary's determined gaze.
You prepared to die with your men?
Orin looked at his men again.
I must.
They're your friends, then?
As close as I got, I guess.
Are you prepared to fight for him?
Asked Rezgen. Orin looked at him in confusion. Rezgen said,
You're not supposed to fight unless you have to, but you're not supposed to get captured or die neither. You protect yourself first, except when it comes to your friends. You gotta take care of them. Now, you're supposed to retreat when you can't win. But this ain't one of those times.
What do you mean? There's a double cavalry patrol out there. We got less than 24, and most of them is injured or captured or both. We try to fight, and we'll all get killed.
Some of them, maybe, but we can win. I know our abilities.
It's ridiculous. Even if we did win, that's the king's army. We'll be hunted for treason and murder.
Drogliks will probably take care of the evidence, Rezgen said. Besides, we need horses, and I've got horses.
They've taken our weapons.
Rezgen unstrapped the small crossbow he had hidden beneath his cloak. He handed it and a leather roll of bolts to the mercenary.
I'll expect these back when we're done.
Orin took the weapon, looking at Rezgen cautiously.
I don't remember seeing these on you.
Rezgen shook his head.
That's the point.
Intentionally scuffing his feet in the dirt, Rezkin strode across the road with an indolent swagger, his cloak slapping against his legs.
All right, I'm here. What do you want?
The Dergmeyer ignored him completely as he supervised the delivery of the horses to the vacant animal pens.
Take him into custody, said the Meyer.
Rezkin pushed his cloak back to reveal the sword hilts at his hips.
I warn ya, I don't intend to go peaceably.
The Meyer huffed.
If you cause trouble, we will not hesitate to kill these men.
With a lazy sweep of his gaze over the haggard faces of the kneeling men, Rezkin shrugged.
Don't matter to me. Hey, my men. You are not with them? Said the Meyer.
When Rezkin gave no answer, he pointed to Oren and said,
Well, I know them to be his men, and he might not appreciate your causing their deaths.
Rezkin said,
Way I see it, you kill them, it's you causing their deaths. Don't matter no how. He's already decided his men are as good as dead. He don't plan to go peaceably neither.
Oren raised the crossbow with his good hand to aim at the Meyer from where he stood, a few paces to Rezkin's right. The Meyer gave Rezkin a look that thoroughly expressed his dismay. He waved to the several dozen armed men behind him and said,
Do you not see that the two of you are outnumbered, nearly 40-1? There is no need for you to go down fighting. If you surrender, we will take you to Ulep for a trial.
Why would you do that? You ain't even investigated yet, and you've already decided we're guilty.
It's obvious what happened here, the Meyer huffed.
It is, Rezkin agreed, if you care to look. It was Drauglik's.
The Dergmeyer walked up behind the Meyer, who respectfully ceded the position.
Why have you not captured this man? He says he intends to fight, said the Meyer.
The officer's attention was diverted when Minder Finwy approached from Rezkin's other side. Finwy said,
Sir, Dergmeyer.
Finwy tilted his head.
Dergmeyer, I am Minder Finwy, assistant to Minder Barkal of the Temple of the Maker in Saret. I have been traveling with these men, and I assure you, they had nothing to do with the deaths on this plantation. None were living when we arrived.
The Dergmeyer glanced from the Minder to Rezkin, to Oren, and back to Rezkin. The Dergmeyer raised a hand and flicked a finger.
Shoot them!
The lead archer raised his bow, and seven others followed. Before the first arrow was released, Oren had already shot off a bolt, and Rezkin had drawn his swords. The silver blades flashed in the waning light as each arrow was knocked aside or cleaved in two. The Minder and Oren, for all his bluster, both dove behind Rezkin for cover, but the mercenary was not fast enough to avoid an arrow through the leg. As soon as the commotion started, Kai and Farson began picking off troops from the rear. The shouts initially went unnoticed, since Rezkin was keeping the closest troops and most of the officers busy. The unbound mercenaries responded quickly to fight for their lives. They attacked the nearest soldiers, collecting weapons as soon as they became available. One of the mercenaries was rendered unconscious before he even gained his feet, but was saved from a killing strike by his comrade. From the field on the right, Isaria danced into the fray, each of her graceful movements ending in a bloody swath. Jimson was at her side, and Malsius and Brant were farther down the line. Most of the horses were gathered in the yard or were already in pens, but those still in the road were spooked. Some of them trampled the soldiers in their escape to the fields, likely to be eaten by Drauglik's if they did not return quickly. While the soldiers, mercenaries, and Rezkin's friends were fighting, the purifiers huddled around their pole of shackles. As Rezkin waded closer, he began to feel the tingle of mage power, and he realized that it was emanating from all three of them. Heavily engaged with a practiced opponent, Malsius was suddenly smashed against an invisible barrier, as if a wall stood between him and the purifiers. The female purifier reached into her robe and withdrew a long dagger. With a hateful glare, she lunged for him. Although Malsius was unaware of the attempted assault, he rolled out of the way just in time to avoid both the dagger and the sword strike aimed at his head. His opponent's blade collided with the ward, deflected unexpectedly, and he stumbled. Malsius took advantage of the error and plunged his sword into the man's exposed back. Rezkin realized the barrier only blocked objects from passing in one direction when the woman suddenly charged through to attack Malsius from behind. Rezkin grabbed for a dagger, but before he could release it, an arrow sailed into the woman's heart. Malsius and Rezgen both glanced to see that Isaria had liberated a bow and arrows from one of the dead archers, and she was apparently an excellent shot. Isaria lowered the bow just as Kai crashed into a man who was approaching her from behind. Farson swept across the road, making quick work of the remaining soldiers in the surrounding cluster. The surprise attack on the troops had been swift and efficient. Before long, soldiers began throwing their weapons aside and laying prostrate on the ground as a sign of surrender. Those that remained lost morale when they realized their officers had been the first to fall. The mercenary company lost another member, and a second was severely wounded, but they had killed all but 10 soldiers and 2 purifiers who were taken prisoner. They had also gained a little over 60 Gendishan red cavalry horses. Orin groaned as he hobbled over to Rezgen.
"What have we done?"
"Saved our lives," Rezgen said.
"We'll be lucky to be hung for this," the mercenary mumbled.
"They were going to kill us anyway."
Orin nodded.
"No way to win."
"We did win. The problem is them,"
Rezgen said, pointing to the prisoners. Jimson and Kai were binding the soldiers' hands while the others searched bodies and gathered horses. Orin limped up to the prisoners, a broken arrow protruding from his calf. He leaned toward them and yelled,
"I told you, Commander, we had nothing to do with it. They was gone or dead when we got here. But he had to blame me and my men. Now these are all dead."
He waved toward the bodies scattered over the ground.
"And we're stuck with you lot. What do you expect us to do now?"
The prisoners glanced at each other, and one of the younger soldiers said,
"You could let us go?"
Orin frowned at him.
"Let you go? So you can get another patrol or a battalion and come after us?"
He limped and huffed and growled and then kicked a rock in frustration. It thudded off the temple of a fresh corpse, which sent him into another juvenile tirade. Isaria watched the rugged mercenary with fascination and muttered to Rezgen and Lareshi,
"Men are too emotional."
Orin stopped in his tracks and said,
"What did she say?"
He took a few steps forward and raised a finger along with his voice.
"What did she say?"
"You should not let your guard down."
"Ah,"
Orin said as he released a breath.
"Well, the Laresh is right. Enemies are all around."
He narrowed his eyes at the prisoners and motioned for Rezgen to step aside.
"We've got Drauglicks, and now our own army. But you could have left. You don't know us. Why'd you stay and get yourself into this mess?"
Rezgen shrugged.
"We needed the horses."
"Bah! Bergen's a day away. You could have gotten horses there without making an enemy of the king. Why do you help us?"
Rezgen glanced at Kai, who was selecting the best horses.
"Boss says we fight? We fight."
Orin gave him a dubious look. Rezgen grinned.
"We could have killed you and taken your horses when we first met."
With a nod toward the house, he said,
"My friend in there don't like senseless killing."
"The pretty one? I noticed he weren't out here fighting. So he's the conscience, and you're the sword?"
Rezgen tilted his head. It was an idea he would have to consider later. He shrugged and said,
"Something like that. Besides, it would have been a waste of resources. Your men came in handy during the battle with the Drowglicks. No telling how many more we'll meet."
"Maybe. But now we've got them to worry about. Once they blab, the king'll have an army after us."
"Dead men can't talk," Rezgen said.
Finwë looked up, obviously paying attention despite his preoccupied appearance, and Rezkin's friends shared an uncomfortable glance. The young soldier scrambled forward on his knees and exclaimed,
But we surrendered!"
Rezgen looked at the man with an icy gaze.
"The mercs surrendered earlier, and your Durgmire would have had them killed anyway. You'd have done the killing when he'd ordered it."
Tears welled in the young man's eyes as he shook his head.
"No, I mean, I would have followed orders, but I wouldn't want to."
"Well, I don't want to have to kill you,"
Rezgen replied.
"But you're a threat."
The older purifier interrupted.
"We are servants of the Maker. We do his bidding. You cannot kill us."
Orin limped over to the man. He pointed back at Minder Finwë and said,
"That's a servant of the Maker, and your troops tried to put an arrow through him. Damned purifiers. Think they can go around taking and killing anyone they please who ain't done nothing wrong."
The The purifiers both looked at the mercenary with fury in their dark gazes. The eldest said,
"The afflicted have made pacts with demons.
What could be worse?"
"Says you," Orin said.
"I don't trust the Scourge no more than you, but the rest of the world is saying they're blessed of the Maker."
He waved at the Minder, who was wandering about mouthing silent words over the dead. Finwë looked up and nodded, then went back to his ministrations.
"It always felt kinda wrong, but truth is, I didn't care much before. I ain't saying I want anything to do with the Scourge. I don't like no one having that kind of power, so as I can't fight against it. But now I know what it's like being accused of something I didn't do, and having people gonna kill you for it. It's wrong."
The sun had finally descended below the horizon, and Kai and Farson delivered a lamp and a few hastily made torches. Farson came to stand at Rezkin's side.
"What do you intend to do now?"
he asked in Pruari, since it was unlikely anyone present would speak the language.
"We cannot keep prisoners. Will you kill them?" "It is what you thought. Yet, I feel it is not what you want,"
Rezkin replied. Farson was silent for too long, but Rezkin waited. Finally, the striker said,
"It would be a mistake to let them go. If I kill them, I will lose the respect and possibly the loyalty of my people. You are at war. They will have to learn that there are difficult choices to be made." "We are not at war with Gendishin,"
Rezkin said.
"We could take the horses we need and run off the rest. It will take them some time to report, and without the use of a mage relay, they may be unable to get word ahead of us."
Rezkin shook his head.
"That may not be true. The purifiers are mages." "You are certain?"
Farson said with genuine surprise.
"Mages are killing their own?"
"I am surprised the strikers were not aware of it," Rezkin said.
"We have never been able to infiltrate the purifiers, and I am not sure Privath even knows how they do what they do. It makes sense, though. Only one with the talent can sense them, and they would sense someone with the talent who is not of their order."
Rezkin's intense gaze was dark in the flickering shadows of the torchlight.
"Only those with talent?"
Farson looked away, but for once, he did not avoid the question.
"I have no answer for that. I know not how you do it. Your master said you are not a mage, and other talented strikers confirmed it. Somehow, Pierre and Jaerden trained you to fend off mage attacks and walk through wards, and I never knew what to believe. I truly thought you had the answer, but I am no longer certain."
Rezkin could appreciate the sentiment. The only thing he could be certain about with Farson was that he could never trust the man, and his former trainer would be disappointed in him if he did. He put those thoughts aside and said,
"We need to consult with Wesson, but we will have to separate the purifiers from the others. I still do not want his abilities exposed to Orin and his men. Place the purifiers in their own shackles. They are enchanted with runes to prevent mages from using their powers. So what do we do with the others?"
Everyone waited in silence during their exchange. Rezkin could feel his friend's eyes on him. He needed more time to come up with a plan that could protect his friends and preserve their honor.
"Move them to the courtyard for now."
The purifiers were placed under guard in the outbuilding that had once housed the ranch hands. It was safest to keep everyone together in case the Drowglicks returned. The scent of the carnage in the yard would surely attract their attention if they were near. For this task, though, they had to maintain secrecy. Wesson stepped through the doorway into the small front room of the lodging. A table was pushed up against the far wall, and each of the purifiers sat on the floor, tied to a table leg. Dressed as he was, Wesson was not the most convincing mercenary, but no one would have guessed he was a powerful mage. The purifiers barely gave him a glance. Wesson noticed a small furry animal dart into the building behind him. It strutted into the corner and then sprawled lazily on the ground, blinking large yellow eyes and flicking its tail. Wesson glanced at Rezkin.
"Is that your—" "Get on with it,"
Rezkin said. Wesson glanced at the cat one more time and then slowly approached the purifiers. They did not react until he was within 6 feet of them. At that point, both of their heads came up, each bearing an expression of contempt.
"Afflicted," growled the eldest.
Wesson spoke in Gendishin so the purifiers would not know they were a Cheyenne, just in case Rezkin decided to let them live.
For once, Wesson thought he would not mind if Rezkin chose death.
They are still bound by the shackles?
Shackles and mage rope, Rezkin replied.
Interesting. What kind of mages are you?
Wesson asked.
We are not mages, the eldest said. We purge the Scourge from this realm back to Hikajnach where it belongs.
How do you know I am a mage?
Wesson asked.
We can see and feel your filth. It spreads from your core to infest every inch of your being. By now it has surely suffused your mind. Let us rid you of its taint so that it does not consume your soul as well.
Wesson squatted in front of them.
How do you propose to do that?
The purifier stared at Wesson intently, appearing as though truly concerned.
We take what is pure for preservation. We would rescue your soul from its afflicted vessel. I see. In other words, you would kill me.
It is the only way. Any death will do, but purification by fire will surely cleanse the deepest desecration.
You want me to volunteer to be burned at the stake?
Many of the afflicted understand the terrible curse they bear. They choose to sacrifice their plagued corporeal vessels and preserve their family names.
A true self-sacrifice is the only way to ensure the curse is not carried on in the blood. If they do not?
Wesson asked.
They are burned anyway, and their families with them, along with anyone else believed to be aiding them.
The man turned his attention toward Rezkin and said,
Anyone who turns in an afflicted may be granted a stay of execution in exchange for a penance. You should not bother with him, Wesson said. He has extreme methods of negotiating. I do not think you would like them.
The purifiers looked at Rezkin uncertainly, and Wesson changed the subject.
What do you see when you look at me?
The one who had been speaking snapped his mouth shut and looked away. The younger one stared at the elder, silently urging him to answer. He glanced anxiously at Rezkin and then looked back to Wesson.
We cannot see the Scourge while wearing the shackles. If we remove the shackles, you can actually see it,
Wesson said. The younger nodded vigorously.
Yes, I can tell you what it looks like. If you could see it, you would understand how it infests the body. It is everywhere. It seeps out and stretches to touch others. Those of us blessed by the Maker to be able to see it can feel it as well. I can feel it in you now, but it is muted.
Wesson said,
They are readers. The purifiers are readers.
He looked to Farson, who stood beside the table behind the purifiers.
Would you please unshackle them?
Are you sure? He could use his powers to attack or escape.
I can handle him,
Wesson said. Farson did as asked, while Wesson stepped across the room and removed the stone amulet, surreptitiously handing it to Rezkin outside the purifier's view. The older purifier watched Wesson intently, his expression becoming furious once the amulet was removed. Wesson returned to stand before the prisoners. The younger purifier was still tied to the table, but the shackles were removed.
What do you see?
He asked. The young man glanced at his companion, who was still scowling.
He should be told, he said. He must be given the opportunity to make the right choice. If he knows, perhaps he will choose the right path.
The tingle of Vimara filled the space, and the young man stared in to Wesson.
I see the normal colors. Strands, some of them thick, others thin. But there is so much of the other. The darkness overwhelms. I have never seen so much darkness.
Wesson frowned.
You can see the Vimara, but you do not know how to interpret it.
The young man frowned.
There is nothing to interpret. It is all evil. You are beyond redemption. When you look at each other, do you not see the power?
Ours is special,
the young purifier said.
The Maker has twisted it for his own use. We are blessed with the ability to identify the accursed bearers of the Scourge. So you claim to serve the Maker with your power, but everyone else must be evil? Why are you so different? You can perform spells, same as anyone else.
No!
We cannot! We do not!
I saw your ward, Wesson said. The young man frowned and glanced at his companion, who now appeared to be sulking.
Yes. Some purifiers have sacrificed a small piece of themselves in service to the Maker. It is a foul taint to learn the art of demons, but they do so to protect the rest of us. They too become